Hey everybody, what's going on? Stefan at the Coastal Noise Podcast. Today my guest is Chris Gillespie, a stand-up comic and film major from Arizona State University. He's got a show coming up at the Mississippi Juke Joint on January 6th. We just got together while he was in town just to talk for a little bit. This is the first podcast out of a series of three that I was doing within a 24-hour period. The other ones, including Steven Anderson, Robbie Amonette, and Fred Salinas, and then the next day after that with Steven Anderson again and Johnny Cole of the Southland Music Line talking music year in review. We had a little mic trouble, more like computer trouble once again. I swear I'm getting a new computer. Because obviously this one is irreparable. But anyway, I'm going to go ahead and get right into it. We talk a little bit about stand-up, a little bit about film, and just have a couple laughs. So, hope you enjoy it. This is Coastal Noise Podcast, episode number 54. Okay, test yours.
Drugs?
We got the drugs.
Alright. The drugs.
Alrighty. Chris Gillespie in the house. We are rolling. Full video, full everything. When was the last time that you and I podcasted? I remember we did a solo thing, me and you. It had to have been at least a year ago.
That was 2 years ago. That was like when I first met you. You just had it set up at Anthony's house and you were like, yeah, you want to do it? And I was like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. So what have you been up to since then?
Well, I've grown a little bit more as a comedian. At the time, I had only done like 9 sets my whole life.
So in what ways would you say you've grown since that period of time?
Last year, I committed to, I live in Phoenix, and I committed to making sure that I, by the end of the year, this is 2 years ago, so by that year, I committed to making sure that I performed in every comedy club that I knew of. And since then, I've done most of that. I've done a lot of different comedy clubs. But also, the main thing was making sure that I do at least 2 or 3 nights a week. Because at the time, I was like only going up like once a month. And I started doing that, and now I've gotten into a habit since then of going up about 2 or 3 times a week. Which has probably led to a bigger alcohol problem, but whatever you can do to justify that.
Cheers. This is tea we're drinking, folks, not alcohol. But, yeah, that's one of the things. I mean, we were just talking about Tom Segura and how he kind of, fantastic comic and great guy, from what I understand. But, we were talking about how, you know, I was trying to describe him to you, and he has a beard, and, you know, he's kind of a, you know, heavier set guy or whatever, because he does, you know, road work a lot, mm-hmm. and he's just all over the place. And you were like, yeah, let's, like describing every comic ever, because there's naturally this, you know, this life, because of the lifestyle that they have, this, you know, on the road, unhealthy, harder to get to gyms, working in places that constantly serve alcohol, with atmospheres that are usually more improved with the drug in the mix. So naturally you have, you know, this, you know, like you were saying, more alcohol in your life as a result. But does that ever cause problems or whatever? I mean, have you ever felt like it's gotten out of hand?
I mean, I would say it has. I'm just not really going to comment on that, though. I would definitely say it has done bad things in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What comedy, higher level comedians have you seen come through? Because kind of tell people a little bit about the scene of where you operate out of. I'm going to turn on this fan while you're talking.
Phoenix seems like it's almost like a it's like a feeder school into the comedy scene in like LA, because it's like 5 hours away from it. So you actually have I think right now there's 5 major comedy clubs in the Phoenix Valley area. There's Laugh Factory, House of Comedy, The Improv, Stand Up Live, and Stand Up Scottsdale. I don't think a lot of people consider that a mainstream one, but I do. which actually that's the one that I had been performing at for this past year. But there's also, on top of the five comedy clubs there, there's also 20 or 30 bar shows. If you really wanted to, you could go up twice a night, every night of the week, and definitely be seen. It's a growing atmosphere. All those comedy clubs get different road and circuit comics that come through, and a lot of them will tell you that this is one of their favorite places to perform, because most comedians love to go to small towns. It's becoming a bigger trend. I think Doug Stanhope started this trend. They go to smaller towns, and because smaller towns aren't really used to like going to a comedy show, they're a little bit more receptive. It's generally considered an easier show. But Phoenix isn't necessarily a small town, but a lot of people wouldn't assume that it has a lot of things like that. Even the people that live there, you know, they will buy a show because of a date or a LinkedIn account they have, but they don't just think about going to a comedy show. But they do, and they see somebody like Tom Segura or Dave Waits or Lynn Coplitz or Chris Porter. And those are just some of the few names that I've seen lately in the past year.
Mm.
And so I guess, in short, it's a pretty growing town for comedy.
Mm. Yeah, and I've seen to have heard that a lot from bigger comics, or at least alternative comics, that they kind of prefer to try to get around smaller areas that aren't as crowded or aren't as buggy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, get places that are a little bit more intimate.
Definitely.
Especially with the fact that you have the internet, and a lot of comedians nowadays have podcasts, so it's easier for them to get a fan base and create awareness for where they're going to be and what they're going to be doing, to go and find those places as opposed to bigger places.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the biggest place you've done?
The biggest place? Well, I've done the Comedy Store in L.A. before. They have an open mic in what's called the Belly Room.
Mm-hmm.
In there, but I guess the stage, I know Louis C.K. was there that night, and he performed. It was actually the set that got him in, came into practice it, but it was the set that got him in trouble on SNL. He just came into work, he was talking about child molesters. I remember seeing it, and it was like the first time I got starstruck.
Yeah.
Like watching Louis C.K., you know, like my hero.
Is that the episode that he did? It was like the 40th anniversary or something?
I think so.
Yeah, I remember watching that, and even though I was like, wow.
It talks about, child molestation. It was a funny bit from what I remember. I got wasted, so I don't really remember the specifics. I just remember that it was funny in my head.
So you were there for that recording?
This was not in SNL. This was in L.A. He came in.
Oh, okay.
I don't really know. I didn't talk to the guy, but I'm assuming that he came in to work on that bit.
Oh, I see.
Kind of practice it in front of people.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, then again, you know, I think after watching him, if that was like one of his first times performing that bit in front of people, this is what I can tell you the difference is between beginners and professionals. A beginner will write a joke or a premise even, and work on it 7 or 8 times before they actually get it right. Professional like gets up there and like already kind of knows what's up,
mm-hmm.
and can perform it the first time and it's gonna rock it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's kind of being able to faster filter your jokes before they get on stage is a gift that I guess we all should be searching for.
Hmm. What would you say your approach is? How do you typically?
Well, I do a lot of storytelling. In the past, I've always pulled from, you know, jokes about my service in the military. I'm trying to get a little bit past that and do stuff about actual, you know, problems that we have, like the aspect of young people spending money at a young age, because we don't really get taught any other way. You know, it's like nobody's bad at money. It's not like a thing. You're not like bad at it. It's, you know exactly what you're supposed to do. You just don't fucking do it. And we're not really taught that at a young age. And yeah.
And it's hard.
That got pretty dry at the end there.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely harder nowadays because of credit cards, and everybody's pushing credit cards on you. You go to the mall, you go to a store, people want to give you a rewards card, you know, and you need a credit card so that you have credit, so that people will give you loans if you want a car or buy a house. So it's kind of pushed upon you. I've heard stories of people that are like in their 70s or something who have never had any credit or whatever, and they go to try to get a house, and they've never, you know, their whole life have never had a record of being bad with money or whatever, but banks won't loan to him because they don't have that established credit or whatever. Well, they're like seven.
Thank God for learning about Christopher Columbus in eighth grade.
What about Christopher?
The fact we didn't really learn anything about managing money, but we sure know a lot about, like, American, well, the false American history that we've been given.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was, I've been on a kind of, like, a pass kick. I'm reading Lonesome Dove right now, and, I just saw The Revenant, which I don't think I was supposed to, because it's not out in theaters yet, but, you know, I was just around with somebody, and they were like, hey, you want to watch this movie? And I was like, sure.
In a shady alley somewhere. You want to watch this bootleg copy boy?
So we
had a peg leg. And
we watched it.
Eye patch.
Yeah. This is my brother, so. but that's an incredible movie. But anywho, like.
He still won't get an Oscar. I swear to God.
Do you think he, I was wondering about this, because you know how everybody, or a lot of people will say that the Oscars and award shows that are at that level are kind of like a club. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of, it's not necessarily who did the best or did the best performance or made the best film, but it's kind of like, who are we going to give it to this year or whatever? And,
sure,
you know, Leonardo DiCaprio being at the top, you know, it would no doubt have some influence on that. I sometimes wonder if it would be possible, this is just, I'm just thinking, rambling here, but if he kind of put it off, you know, he was asking, don't give it to me, like, he's just waiting for, like, the ultimate, because then you have all these people who go, who love him, who say, who get impassioned by the fact that he's never gotten one, and he should have gotten one for Wolf of Wall Street, and he should have gotten one for, he was in Gangs of New York, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, just a bunch of others.
He's waiting to stage his, like, all-time snuff film. He just
right.
kills himself. That's what it is. And then he gets it posthumously, along with the Medal of Honor. He's waiting yeah. for that.
He's never died in any of his films, has he?
Yeah.
Has he? There's
Titanic.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Great Gatsby.
I've actually never seen Titanic or Great Gatsby.
Yeah.
There's,
like, a lot of memes about the aspect of him dying in those two movies.
Okay. Well, there's somebody
else. And Django, also.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He dies to Django.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. But, oh, speaking of which, Hateful Eight is
I haven't seen that one yet, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't either.
I'm excited to see how Quentin Tarantino showcases his foot fetish in this movie. He usually does that.
Yeah, what did he do for Django?
Django? Okay,
by the way,
wait.
For people who don't know what the hell we're talking about, Quentin Tarantino has a foot fetish, and almost, pretty much in every film, he's had featured feet in some scene or another.
Well, I know from Dusk Till Dawn, it was really obvious. Like, she pretty much mouth fucks him with her feet. And then in Inglourious Basterds, it's the scene where he takes off the shoe and he's trying to put the right shoe on. Pulp Fiction, they don't really show it, but it's the foot massage joke that they do. In Kill Bill, it's the scene where she's trying to wiggle her big toe,
mm-hmm.
and they just show the foot for a while. Django, I know it's got to be in there.
Mm.
I don't know, man. Couldn't really tell you.
Yeah. I'm going to be looking for it now for the Hateful
Eight.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I just want them... I want him to come out with a movie where, like, everybody's feet is the star, and they just, like, put little googly eyes on the toes. And then it's just like, okay, we get it, you know?
Yeah.
And then that's his final masterpiece. It would probably still sell millions.
What, I know he's got a certain number that he's reaching for right now. That he's going to be, like, his last...
Number of foots touched? Or...
No, just films in general that he's going to make. He's stated publicly several times that he's only going to make X amount of films, and then he's going to stop making films, is what he said.
Yeah, he's a weird guy.
Yeah, I know. but this would probably be his, like, eighth film or something like that.
Eighth?
I believe so. Could be.
From Dusk Till Dawn. I'm not going to do the math. I'm not really a good mather, so. I'm pretty sure it's more than eight, though.
So it'd be in December and all. What? And you're a film major.
Yeah.
Tell people. So... What movies have you seen this year that have caught your attention that were particularly good?
Man, I don't... You see, the thing is, I don't really go to the theaters that much because I like to stay inside away from people where it's mm-hmm. safe. And I've watched a few things there, like independent stuff. I watched this movie.
Talk into your mic real quick.
True story about, I don't know if this is working or not. I could be just talking to you, like, a little conversation.
I'm sorry. The shit just died out again.
Very good.
All right. Jesus Christ.
And we're back.
Fucking A, man. I don't know what the hell just happened, but... Well, I do know what happened. Just computers do crappy things.
I know. You left it silent for a minute, and it sort of made me think about how awful the human condition is. That's what happens when there's silence. I can't handle it.
Jesus. Oh, man. Well, I don't know whether to pick up where we left off or just... Because there's so much anger where we left off at this point. It just got more aggressive as it went along.
I think we were talking about movies.
We were talking about Tarantino, and it's probably his fault that all that happened just now. Did you see Mad Max by chance?
No, I haven't been able to see that. Like I said, as far as movies that came out in theaters, I don't think I've seen a single one this year.
Oh, really?
I do know that I want to see Creed really bad.
Okay.
I was always a really big Rocky fan, and actually, you know when the newest one came out? You've seen all of them, right?
I can't say that I have.
Okay. So, like, it's pretty well known that Rocky V is, like, the worst Rocky movie. And right before Rocky Balboa, like, the sixth one came out, I was in high school, and I went to, like, Walmart to buy, like, the DVD set 1 through 5 to prepare, you know, kind of like people do with Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
I had the set in my car. I left it somewhere. I came back. Somebody had broken into my car and stole all but Rocky V. Like, took it out of the wrapper and everything. It was pretty bad. And left another copy of it. No, they did steal the actual Rocky V. It's a really shit movie. Actually, here's the thing about it. It's not that it's a bad movie, because if you actually watch it alone and it was the only Rocky movie you've ever seen, it probably wouldn't be that bad, at least compared to Rocky IV. It's just that it didn't follow the formats of it, any of the other movies. Mm-hmm. You know, and how do you follow? Because in Rocky IV, Rocky, like, single-handedly topples communism. He topples the Soviet Union. And for some reason, like, nobody really knows why, but he fights in Russia, and everybody's all of a sudden cheering for him after the sixth round. It doesn't really make any sense. And they don't even explain that. It's just in a montage, like in the beginning of the montage of them fighting, everybody's cheering for Ivan Drago. And then somewhere in the sixth round, I think, they just start cheering for Rocky because... I don't know.
He's the underdog.
Yeah.
He's coming back.
Yeah, it's, I guess, the accepted theory.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't seen Mad Max. I want to see Star Wars, too. But, I don't like it when people build up movies too much, man. Mad Max, I feel like I should see, because everybody says it's good, but people build it up too much, and I just don't think it's... The best movies I've ever seen are ones that I just put on Netflix, and nobody told me about it, and I was like, it was a good movie.
Yeah.
I saw this. There's a movie on Netflix everybody should check out called Iceman. And it's got Mike Shannon, who probably is my new favorite actor. But it's about the true story of Richie Kuklinski, who was the Gambino family hitman. He killed over like 100 people. They put out a documentary about him a few years ago, and then they made an actual movie retelling a story. It's got Winona Ryder, Ray Liotta, you know, the typical gangster movie cast.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Shannon. Chris Evans actually was in it too. Pretty big character there. So.
Old movie or new?
No, it's pretty new. Like in the last 2 years.
Okay.
It's pretty good though. And it was just like, I don't think it was a Netflix original, but I did see it on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one that I saw this year that was a Netflix original called Snowpiercer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty good. And it does follow.
Wait, Snowpiercer, the train movie?
Yeah. Yes, that movie.
That was a Netflix original?
Well, no. Netflix, okay, from what I understand, the Koreans made it. Let's just call it that.
It was the guy who did Old Boy, I want to say.
Yeah, the guy the guy's in the movie, actually. He's like the Asian guy in the American version.
Yeah, who doesn't
talk. Yeah, he's like, not the director, but he's like a big star in Korea.
Oh, okay.
He's like their, I don't know who you compare that to here. He's like their... Danny DeVito or something. Because in America, everybody gets compared to Danny DeVito. you gotta beat that first, and then you can be Tom Cruise. But it was a, yeah, it was pretty good. It says it on there. If you look on Netflix, it says it's a Netflix original, and I think that was because they adapted it to the American something or other. I don't know, dude. I know on it says Netflix original.
Are you sure?
It says it. I know that's not true, because I know that it was not made by Netflix. But I think Netflix at this point, it's like Fox Searchlight now. It's not... Yeah, they say originals, but it's not like Netflix gets a crew together. They just, like, find people that have, like, an independent movie, and then they make it, and then fund it. They don't, like, make their own movies, but, mm-hmm. like, any of the stuff, even the shows, I don't think. Mm-hmm. And it's always a writer that comes to them, mm-hmm. you know?
I think you were the one who I first heard BoJack Horseman from. Yeah. I think I read a post or something from you.
The newest season isn't as good. It was really original because they do, like, animal humor, which I wasn't used to.
Are you talking about the second season, or did they put the third one out?
They put a second season out. They haven't put a third one out. I think they did, like, a weird Christmas special, too, in between the first two seasons.
Oh, okay.
The Joe, it's another one of those shows where they just do the same formula, and eventually it'll get old, you know? And it kind of did for me, anyway.
Yeah.
As far as shows go, man, I haven't really seen anything.
Well, Bill Burr's got his new show, F is for Family.
Last night, I tried to watch it. And I can't say that I enjoyed it, but I will give it this. It was a more realistic approach to, like, the way a dysfunctional family works. Because the dad's just, like, pissed off all the time and yelling at people. And I was trying to find some comedy in it, but it was mostly just like, oh, this is really real. And it's because people like Bill Burr, like, take the approach of comedy of being a search for truth, which I can mm-hmm. agree with. But it was just more dark, I thought, than it was funny.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, that's just based off of one episode.
Yeah. His 2014 special, the black and white one, I'm Sorry You Feel That Way.
Yeah.
It's like one of the best specials I think I've ever seen.
Yeah. You know, one of the differences, and one of the reasons that Europeans complain about American comedy so much, is that a lot of people say it's like being yelly, like Joe Rogan's really yelly and, like, you know, angry. That's the thing that a lot of Europeans complain about, is that our comedy's really angry and, like, we shout a lot and, like, we do, like, outspoken things, as opposed to, like, sticking to, like, quirky, punny, like, jokes that is usually common to, like, British humor.
Mm-hmm.
I say European, but that really just is pretty much sums up Western European sentiment.
Well, who are some of their top comics as far as European, British, and...
I mean, it'd be people you know. What's that guy's name? I keep thinking Iggy Pop, and that's not his name. Is Eddie Izzard. That would be, like, probably the top, like, British comic that I know of.
Okay.
There's a guy in Phoenix, actually, named Gordon McKay. And he's not, like, well-known at all. He's, like, you know, good, really good comic. But he's from Scotland, and he does a lot of those kind of jokes, too. But he's a good hybrid, because he does, like, the angry, yelly stuff, but he does it, and he talks about, like, Scotland a little bit. So it's kind of a cool, like, it's fun to watch him, like, as a hybrid of comedy. Mm-hmm. Two different worlds.
Is there any specials that you've seen this past year? If not...
Yeah, I've seen a lot of those. I've seen a lot of the people that come... Oh, I will say this, at Stand Up Scottsdale, the best guy I've seen this year, and he probably became one of my newer favorite comics, this guy named Mike Kaplan. A lot of people have heard of him, but he's really good. He did this joke, and it was... He talks about, like, the differences between shrooms and salvia, and it was the most spot-on definition of, like, a shroom trip versus, like, the way salvia feels. And it was funny as hell.
Yeah.
But he was probably the best live performance I've seen. Another guy that I've seen, like, on Netflix was... he came out with one a few years ago, and I watched it, and it was good. And then he... I don't know if it was because he was a yes man or just bad management, but he accepted work for this sitcom, and it was just one of those crappy, like, 90s style with a laugh track, Seinfeld-esque, you know, but, like, that's a died-out thing, like, mm-hmm. shit sitcoms. His name is John Mulaney. And then it just failed, the pilot just failed, and then I was like, dang, like, the special was so good, I hope, like, he comes back. And he did. This year he came up with another special, and it was just as good as the original one, if not better. So that's another guy to check out. I've never, like, that's not somebody I've ever met. But he's pretty good. And that's good to see that he, like, came back after. That's usually a career ender right there when your first show that you get on is a failure.
Mm-hmm.
So.
What about Dave Attell? Have you seen his new...
I didn't even know he did a new one.
Well, actually, I don't know if it's new, but it's called Roadwork. It's on Netflix. It was new to me, so... but that was pretty good. We were talking about Tom Segura earlier. Mm-hmm. Completely normal, hilarious special, really good.
Everyman, yeah.
Who, him?
Yeah. He has, like, the Everyman style of comedy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What's the Everyman style?
Just, like, a normal guy, not, like, too handsome or too hideous, you know, just, like, a middle-aged, usually, probably got a wife, two kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Everyman. Something that, what the stereotype of white America would look up to.
Mm.
But stereotypes are usually wrong, so.
Yeah. Yeah. If you had to, if you could choose, I'll say, of taking a route of going and doing things more exclusively in the film industry or comedy, which one do you think you would pull for?
Definitely comedy. It's, I mean, it's a, like stand-up comedy. It's a, I think it's a harder, there's different things about both worlds that are harder and easier. It's easier with stand-up because you don't have to rely on people. I did a short film this year, and I'm so embarrassed of it, actually. And it turned out so bad, partly because, like, I just wasn't as skilled at writing a film. I'll give myself the bad credit for that. But also, it's so hard to get people to come together, man. Like, you'll get, like, and people are always excited at first, you know. I'm really good at motivating people to, yeah, man, that sounds like an awesome idea, we'll do it. But then the day of it comes, and, you know, I got people that are hungover, I got people that just happen to be out of town for a family emergency, and, you know, it's hard to set that date up again, you know, for, I mean, that small film only took the whole thing is 5 minutes. We only shot it one day, and then the editing process probably took about a week. It wasn't, like, a crazy huge film, it was just supposed to be, like, a YouTube thing. But getting people together, I had to call in a completely different cast than I originally had because the original cast bailed on me. And that is what makes the film industry harder. But comedy is harder. Comedy is easier because of the fact that you've just got to bring yourself to a mic and that's all you got to do and mm-hmm. you just keep working. The harder part is that you're up there by yourself. You don't have anything to hide behind. You know, and that's the part that you got to get used to. I always like to say that I never get nervous going on stage anymore, but I kind of do. There's always that first, right when you get up there, that, like, man, I don't know if this is going to work. But then you just eventually, whether it works or not, you just start getting more comfortable and saying, well, if this fails, then, like, at least then I can learn a lesson. You know, at least I know where to go from there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially if you're recording yourself.
Yeah. Do you do that? Do you record yourself?
I try to. You know, sometimes I go to a book show just to see people and, like, maybe somebody, like, bailed on it and so I'll, you know, jump in. So I don't really plan it out when that happens, but for the most part I try to record. Mm-hmm. Especially if I'm working on a new bit. I will say that I haven't really been, this year I haven't really, other than the show coming up, I haven't really promoted as much this year. I ran an open mic for about 6 months and, I kind of promoted for it, like I posted on Facebook, but it's hard to promote when you don't really know how to, like, get people's attention the proper way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, what I've noticed is, we had, one of the open mics we had, it was actually going to be a filming for Bar Rescue, and I noticed that it was actually pretty easy promoting for that, because people see that there's, like, a TV credit for it. You know, they want to come because they think they're going to be on TV. Whether they admit that or not, that's why they came. I mean, I got 40 people out to come to that bar or that mm-hmm. club. But then you look at that, you try to get people out on a regular night whenever they're just seeing local comics and people don't really want to come. And if they do, they feel like they're doing you a favor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's really hard to promote for shows. Your friends, when you first start out, your friends will come to your shows. And that's usually going to be just about it. And then they have this mentality of, well, I've already come to one show to support you, you know? So then it just becomes hard to get people back to every, you know, every show if you're doing it, like, every week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you start doing little things, like little gimmicks, like, oh, it's an industry night, you know, I'll have, you know, we got 2-for-1 drink specials, which we already do for everybody anyway on the open mic nights. And then you do things like, I used to tag all the, like, hot girl bartenders in the area just to get, I figured, if dudes see, like, oh, that chick's going to be there. I'm going to try to go. You know, they'll end up coming. And sometimes they would come, you know, but it's just really difficult. I always thought social media, when you look at it, it looks like it would be the easiest way to promote, but man, it just doesn't work. I don't think people take like Facebook posts very seriously. Maybe they shouldn't, but there's something that happened within like the social media posting where people kind of look at it and go, oh, that's just, it's not really serious if it's on Facebook, you know? Mm-hmm. And really, comedy shouldn't be serious. It's not a serious thing. It's just a, you know, a comedy night. But it's serious for me when it comes to, you know, a low turnout versus a high turnout. So that's the sad part of comedy. This is when it starts to become work, and it's just not as fun anymore as it was when you first started just doing mics.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, there's the oversaturation thing, too, with social media. Because everybody's got something that they're trying to put out there.
Yeah.
And you've got to fight through the white noise and through whatever else anybody else is trying to get, you know, people to there.
Yeah.
Whatever. So, yeah, I understand. It's not easy stuff.
And I've tried to, you know, another thing that I've tried to get better at is being friendly with other comics. For the longest time, and I think I've done a little bit better with that this year, for the longest time, you know, after going to so many, well, specifically when I started running this open mic at Stand Up Scottsdale, I started to hate, like, a lot of other comics, newer comics mostly, and it's not really fair. And the reason I hated them so much was because a lot of comics really are narcissistic. And it's, you know, it's not even a, I can handle somebody being narcissistic about their looks because it's just a service value thing. That guy's probably just a dumb person. But when somebody's narcissistic about, like, their mind, that's when that's, like, a really annoying thing because everybody always wants to talk over everybody outside or, you know, whatever. And it's all about, like, who can be the most edgy, you know. And, like, you know, people do things like, I saw a guy go on stage and, like, he brought, like, a plastic bag filled with water and put it in his pocket and, like, turned it around and pretended to pee on stage. And it was just like, dude, like, what? This isn't really funny, you know? Like, people that use too many props or whatever. And then, you know, they want to, especially if you're running the open mic, they always want to talk to you because they want to go up, you know, whenever they want to go up. And it's like, dude, like, I'm going to, because the way I would run it is, I'd pretty much go, because we would have, like, 30 or 40 comics show up. And it was hard to get everybody through there, you know. And people would complain because they'd get there, like, super early and then end up leaving at 11 p.m. because, you know, it just took that long to get through the list. But I would try to be as fair as possible. But if I had, like, six comics in a row that were just bad and people were starting to get up and walk out, I'd have to put up somebody that is a ringer. You know, somebody good. Technically, I think the way that it's usually supposed to work is the host gets back up. But a host can't, between 40 people, a host can't just get back up after every act, you know. And so I decided I would just start throwing, I would have like a list of like 10 comics that I know and trust that can bring a room back, and I would throw them in the middle, like whenever the show started dying down.
Mm-hmm.
And even that, like only like 4 people would get skipped, but I would still get so many complaints about it, and it just started to make me hate them so much, you know, just like, like... I'm trying to, like, do what's best for the show, and all you're caring about is being able to do your 5 minutes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I forget that there was once a time when I was like that, and I think that narcissism and that, like, strong overconfidence in yourself is probably what carries you through the first, like, year of comedy when you really, really suck.
Mm-hmm.
Do I probably, like, suck? Yeah. Yeah, in terms of the fact that I don't always, like, do really, like, really well. Like, there are times when, like, I don't do too well. You know, it's not until, like, probably 10 years that I always hear, at least, that you do sets every single time and kill. But even then, you know, there's people that are really well-known, and they go out to try new bits and don't really rock it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's always the atmosphere that, you know, just depends on what people are, like, willing to listen to.
Yeah.
And, you know, it depends on your mood, too. I know I have discovered that I cannot do comedy drinking. I can smoke a little bit, but I cannot drink. It just isn't good. My rhythm's, you know, a little bit messed up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not thinking clearly. I used to think I could just do it, but I really can't.
Even a little bit, or?
No, I'll sometimes if it's like a long set, like if I'm headlining or whatever, I'll have like a drink halfway through just to lubricate my mouth, but, and I ain't no pussy drinking water. But I don't, like, you know, I used to just have like 6 or 7 beers before I'd go up, you know. And I can't do that anymore. I can smoke a little bit. That actually slows my thought processing down because I speak too fast naturally.
Mm-hmm.
If I smoke a little bit, it slows that down.
Mm.
Nice. And I can focus on one thing at a time.
Yeah.
It's easier.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see how that would be problematic if, you know, if this was a serious thing that you were trying to do and you had to do it all the time, especially in the beginning to get off the ground,
mm-hmm.
you know, drinking as many beers as that just to...
Just to ease the pain and loneliness of the beginnings of comedy.
Yeah. And just, you know, for whatever it is, whether it's, you know, people do it for confidence or just to get the flow better or, you know.
We would get a lot of guys come in and, you know, there would be like, comedy would be like a bucket list thing. There was like a few nights at that open mic where there was definitely like some kind of office building exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Like a whole... office would come in and like cheer for like one guy that was probably like the office funny guy or something.
Mm-hmm.
And those were my favorite because they obviously brought a bunch of people that aren't, you know, other comedians.
Yeah.
They're actual audience members. And the secret is to put those guys up closer to the end because then everybody stays, mm-hmm. you know, for everybody else. And they may not like it, but at the end of the day, you get that 2-for-1 drink special and they're fine anyway because that's what they really came for.
Yeah.
Just drinking and having a good time. I think too many people forget about what comedy really is, which is, you know, making people laugh, making people have a good time.
So what's going on with your next show that you're doing down here?
Well, I guess I gotta go tonight to see, to scope out the place a little bit more to see what comics are pretty good to open up. But it's just, you know, last year I asked the guy that was running Landmass Comedy if I could headline, and he said sure, and it actually went really well. I didn't really do much promotion wise, but people showed up, and we're hoping the same thing will happen this year, and it should be fun.
What's the date on that?
January 6th at 9:30, so it's a Wednesday.
January 6th, 9:30.
Yeah.
All right, people. Well, I hate to cut it short. We had, you know, to fight the technical difficulties for a while, and we got the next podcast coming up at 5:00 with the other guys on imagery. We got Steven Anderson and Fred Salinas on photography work, and then Robbie Eminette with paintings, and then a third one following up tomorrow, so definitely check those out. But I'm glad we got you in here, man, and even if it was just for the briefest of moments here. Appreciate you coming, and let me know whenever, you know, if you have stuff that you're tweeting out or posting or whatever, and you know, try to get a couple more people out there. So,
all right, sounds good.
Cool. Alrighty, that's all for this one. We will catch y'all next time. Adios.